Live from the Civic Media World Headquarters in Madison, Wisconsin, it's the Todd Albaugh Show. And now, pursuing truth wherever it may lead, here's your host, Todd Albaugh.
Across Wisconsin on the Civic Media Radio Network and streaming worldwide on the Civic Media app. Good afternoon, everybody. I'm Todd Albaugh, along with the incomparable listener Aaron Zommers on the board, taking your phone calls as well. It is 6 past the hour of 1 o'clock. Welcome into hour number 2 of the big program. It is Tuesday, February 27th, 2024. Glad to have you along. Excited for our guest coming up after the break at the bottom of the hour. He is Jeff Timmer, former executive director of the Wisconsin-Michigan, I'm so used to saying Wisconsin Republican Party, former executive director of the Michigan Republican primary, Reed Todd. He is now a senior advisor at the Lincoln Project, along with our friend Trigvi Olson. He is co-host of a program called A Republic, also a great strategist, Jeff Timmer, coming up live at the bottom of the hour. You're not going to want to miss it, because here's the thing. For those of us interested in politics who follow it, who read about it, who watch it, you may tune into your favorite local or cable channel tonight. You may turn into your favorite radio station at the top of the hour. You will hear reporting on what's coming out of Michigan tonight. Jeff Timmer is someone who lives in Michigan. He's run the Republican Party in Michigan. He knows the thinking of Michiganders. And so he's going to tell us the lay of the land in Michigan, both the Republican and the Democratic side, and what we should be watching for the results over there. Also going to give us, as a Michigander, what people over there are thinking. What does Joe Biden really have something to worry about tonight? And what should we be watching on the Republican side? Is it going to be similar to South Carolina, where everybody's going to be want to talk about how Trump wins tonight, if he does, assuming that he does? But again, I think the bigger story here that people are missing is the 40% of people in South Carolina who voted for Nikki Haley. And 59% of those folks are saying they will never vote for Trump in a general election. And that aligns with what the Associated Press was reporting yesterday, which is 1 in 5 people nationally, Republicans, are saying they're never Trumpers in November. And in Wisconsin, that lines up with people like former House Speaker Paul Ryan, Republican of Wisconsin, Janesville, who has said he is a never again Trumper, and the immediate past chairman of the Wisconsin Republican Party, Andrew Hitt, who has now said he is a never Trumper and that Trump is not the right person moving forward, and now admits, in fact, even though he was a fake elector, that Trump won the election in 2020. And I think there's a lot of people, somewhere between 20-25% of Wisconsin people who traditionally vote Republican, who say, look, this guy is just a bridge too far. Y'all might vote for your assembly person or state senator or sheriff or register of deeds on the Republican ticket, but I think there are people out there that just say, look, there is too much extremism, Trumpism, and I'm not going to vote for that. Of course, one of the big issues right now, making its way, we're going to hear a lot about this throughout the rest of the week. What happens on Ukraine, Israel, Taiwan, foreign aid? What happens at the border in terms of border security? And also now, due to this Alabama Supreme Court decision last week, something that, you know, a lot of people maybe never heard of or didn't talk about, IVF, better known in layman's terms as artificial insemination, where a couple cannot conceive the traditional way, and so they conceive via a test tube or whether they have another woman carry the child for them. It's very common. And these are gut-wrenching issues and very expensive and emotionally expensive for couples. And now the Alabama Supreme Court says that is against the law in Alabama, saying that a frozen embryo constitutes a person. And if one of those frozen embryos are not used and thrown out, or if it's implanted in the woman and she doesn't carry that embryo to term, it could be murder. I mean, this is just beyond the pale. So it turns out that Dobbs is only the beginning. Source of this information from the great author and reporter Heather Cox Richardson. Despite a large majority of support for aid to Ukraine among voters and even among Republicans in Congress, mega Republicans have little interest in a war to defend democracy. Mega Republicans are zealously fighting the war for personhood. They want the moment of conception to be declared a human being with full legal rights. Overturning Roe v. Wade was but one battle, a one-battle win. When the Alabama Supreme Court decided last week that embryos frozen for in vitro fertilization, or IVF, are living persons with rights and interests. The Alabama decision cited the Dobbs decision 15 times because the Dobbs decision referred to fetuses as unborn human beings. But these white Christian nationalist extremists, and again, let's stop there for a second. When we say this term, white Christian nationalists, don't get me wrong. This is not an attack, and we're not singling out people who are good folks that go to their Lutheran church or their Methodist church or their Wesleyan or their Catholic, traditional Christian churches in your community. These are white Christian nationalists, evangelicals, extreme evangelicals, who believe that the Bible should replace the U.S. Constitution as the law of the United States. That's who we're talking about. So continuing on, the white Christian nationalist extremists are creating a big political problem for the rest of Republicans. 2% of babies born in the U.S. are the product of IVF. 2%. Turns out IVF is very popular. A February 23rd memo from the National Republican Senatorial Committee, or NRCS, noted that 86% of the people they polled support increased, not reduced, access to IVF procedures. Let me say this again. These are Republicans from just last week, February 23rd, memo from the Republican National Senatorial Committee, 86% of people polled support increased, not reduced access to IVF procedures. Healthcare providers in Alabama are halting all IVF services out of fear of prosecution. Personhood laws have been enacted in 4 states and are advancing in at least 12 other states. In the U.S. House of Representatives, Republicans have introduced a national personhood bill titled Life at Conception Act. It has 124 co-sponsors, including, guess who? Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson. In the U.S. Senate, a Life at Conception Act has 18 co-sponsors. Mega Republicans are indeed at war, but it's against democracy and the will of the people for a theocracy. Reflections of the great Heather Cox Richardson. Appreciate our staff putting that together for us. 844-967-2789. 844-967. Let's go to the lines. Jack in Merrimack. Jack, thanks for calling. We'll see you. Whoop, Jack apparently lost you there. Jack sometimes has a cell phone. So, Jack, if you're listening and call back, we'll get you back on there. But this is, I think, one of the most interesting points in this piece. This according to Republicans, the 86% of Americans polled support increasing, not reducing access to IVF procedures. This is why Trump came out this week and glad-handed and said, oh, I'm all for this. I love IVF. I'll find it. I don't have it in front of me. I'll find it either before the end of the show or for tomorrow. Remind me, Mr. Zommers. There's one Republican who literally used the term breeders, that we want to breed more kids, demeaning women to dogs and cattle. This is what these mega folks think of women. that they are there to be bred to create life. 844-967-2789. Dick in Madison, listening on WMDX. Dick, thanks for calling in. What say you?
Yeah, I mean, equating them to livestock, for crying out loud. And Trump, you know, is on the wrong side of so many issues. I just don't understand. I don't personally believe that he's got a chance for a lot of reasons. It's mainly money with me. It's evaporating. But the other thing is, I don't understand in Michigan, help me with this, how can these people not want to vote? I understand the issue with Palestine and all of it, okay, somewhat. But you're going to vote for a guy who literally would throw you out of the country?
Right. We'll ask our friend Jeff Timmer, who is a Michigander who knows that state very well at the bottom of the hour. We'll ask him that.
But the other thing with Trump, too, as I see it, and I told somebody at the very beginning of this horrible situation in the Middle East, that Biden dealing with Netanyahu is not going to be a good thing. You know,
right.
My wife's grandmother used to have a saying, if you mess with, you're going to get stinky fingers. And he is their version of Trump.
Right.
He's a horrible person. And you're caught in the middle with dealing with him. And I know that they're working behind the scenes to try and amp him back, but
well, they say
he's all bent on saving himself from the powers that be there. They want him gone, as I understand it.
Yeah, I mean, it's a complex issue, and certainly Netanyahu, my understanding as well, is he's not particularly popular even in his own country, but they're in the middle of war, so, I mean, you know, that makes it very complicated. But, yeah, I mean, I heard the comments last night of all, I mean, Joe Biden, President Biden, was on Seth Meyers, celebrating Meyers' 10th anniversary as the late-night host, having ice cream. And this came up, and the president kind of nonchalantly said that he hopes to have some sort of a ceasefire at least agreed to by this weekend at some point. We'll see. We'll see. I mean, these types of negotiations can fall apart at any second. So it's not a thing until it's a thing. But we'll see. Appreciate the call, Dick. 844-967-2789. 844-967-2789. Come back, talk a little bit more. Talk about what's going on with Ukraine as well, briefly. Again, believe it or not, even though it's not getting a lot of coverage, there is a bipartisan solution to try to get Ukrainian aid, Israeli aid, and Taiwan aid through Congress, as well as fund the border. We'll talk about it for a couple of people trying to make it happen on the other side. Don't go anywhere. This is the Todd Ball Show for a Tuesday, and this is the Civic Media Radio Network. Wherever it may lead, and having fun doing it. Welcome back to the Todd Ball Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. It is 20 past the hour of 1 o'clock. Coming up at the bottom of the hour, our friend Jeff Timmer back on the program. He is the former executive director of the Michigan Republican Party, now a senior advisor with the Lincoln Project, is a Michigander, lives there, knows politics in Michigan like the back of his hand. He is going to be in after the bottom of the hour to talk to us on primary day in Michigan. What we should watch for tonight as the results come in, his thoughts, his prediction. Jeff Timmer, great guy, great guest, going to be fantastic at the bottom of the hour. Right now, and again, I'm trying to do more of this in 2024, bring us information where things are actually trying to be worked out, where people are actually working together, because we spend a lot of time on things that are going wrong and when people can't work together. I want to bring you, these are two guys that were on Face the Nation with Margaret Brennan and CBS over the weekend. Brian Fitzpatrick, a Republican, and Jared Golden, a Democrat, who are trying to work on a bipartisan, what they're trying to do is force a vote on this bill that passed the U.S. Senate in a bipartisan fashion to get aid to Ukraine, Israel, Taiwan, and also the border with Mexico. And of course, Mike Johnson, on the orders of Donald Trump, are holding this up. But here now, this is Fitzpatrick, the Republican, talking about, is there actually a chance they could get this done this week? And here's how.
Do you have any confidence that there's a way to get Republican leadership to move on this?
I do. We have a bipartisan bill. It's the only one in the House. And as of Friday, we have filed with the clerk expedited consideration. Normally, any kind of discharge like that would take 30 days to even be considered ripe. We figured out a way with the parliamentarian to expedite that to a 7-day period.
Just to be clear, this is to go around the Speaker of the House, who has refused to put a bill on the floor.
Well,
forcing him to consider.
It's just a way to get a mechanism to get a bill to the floor. And just to be clear about what we're trying to accomplish here, this is time sensitive. It's existential. I just got back from Ukraine. Advika fell in the past 7 days. We lost Lake and Riley in the past 7 days. And in the past 7 days, 200 families had to bury their kids because of fentanyl. So what our bill does is it combines border security with this foreign aid, both existential. And we are forcing this bill to the floor to make sure that everybody acts because, as President Zelensky said, they have weeks and not months to get reinforcements on the front lines.
So you are trying to create an alternative to the bill that's about $60 billion. Yours is about $49 or so billion. Congressman Golden here, one of the things that's not in this bill, though, is humanitarian aid for Israel and for Ukraine. That's a non-starter for a lot of Democrats. And you have a Remain in Mexico border security policy here that forces migrants to wait outside the U.S. while their asylum claim is processed. How are you going to get fellow Democrats to get on board with this?
Well, I think the most important thing to remember here is that the votes are there to support Ukraine and our other allies, Israel, Taiwan. And I think that the votes are there on border security as well. You know, the Senate started with a bill. They had to boil it down to whatever could get 60 votes. The House needs to go through a very similar process. Brian and I are actually talking about having a more open debate on the House floor. Amendments should be in order. We need to find a way to get a deal that gets us to 218. I think a deal like that has to grow out of the middle and is unlikely to begin with a one-party solution.
So are you saying within that then, if your bill is up for consideration, amendments like adding in things like humanitarian aid are possible?
Potentially, yes. Although I think that we also have to set priorities. So at the end of the day, what are the most important crises that we have to deal with in the here and now, in the very short term? And I would say that that would be securing our border and also helping avoid battlefield catastrophes in Ukraine.
So there you go. I wanted to play that for you because despite what you may hear a lot of times, myself included, how badly things are going and how nobody wants to work together, I think it's important to uplift people like Brian Fitzpatrick, a Republican from Pennsylvania, and Jaron Golden, a Democrat from Maine, who are sitting down and actually, I mean, give Fitzpatrick a lot of credit. He's talking about doing an end run around the Speaker of the House. Could lose his seat over that. But he's been to Ukraine, he's seen the atrocities, and he's basically saying, I don't care. And remember, if this guy that won the special election in the George Santos seat, the Democrat who won, there's some controversy now that Mike Johnson might not even allow him to be sworn in this week and seated, which could have a whole nother upheaval in the House this week. But let's assume for a second that this guy gets seated. Johnson will only have a 2-seat majority. So that gives Republicans like Brian Fitzpatrick a lot more leverage to call for a motion to vacate the chair. And we could be getting into territory where all it takes are a couple of Republicans with chutzpah and courage to join with the Democrats to put Hakeem Jeffrey in the speakership chair. There's even rumors right now in Washington that some of the MAGA folks are trying to get Johnson to renege on the invitation to the President of the United States, Joe Biden, to give the State of the Union address this year, just to be childish. So a lot of credit goes to Republicans like Brian Fitzpatrick of Pennsylvania trying to force this vote, trying to do an end run around Mike Johnson, and Jaron Golden, a Democrat. So as much as we talk on this program and other programs, but it's important, right, to bring this to light when things are just ridiculously bad. There are people there trying to do good, both Republicans and Democrats. Brian Fitzpatrick, a Republican. Jaron Golden, a Democrat. And I applaud Face the Nation for putting them on together. By the way, Jaron Golden looked like I do most days. I was wearing a very nice flannel shirt. And I'm like, look, you know, I wear flannel a lot, but I mean, if I was going on national TV. But anyway, there's just two instances of people who are actually trying to do the right thing. Because we can't let Vladimir Putin win in Ukraine. The threat to American democracy, world democracy, is on the line. Watched a program on CBS this morning. I think it was on last night as well. These kids in Ukraine who are being kidnapped by Russians and then are being trafficked. It's appalling. It's evil. And it has to be stopped. So I applaud Brian Fitzpatrick, a Republican. And I applaud Jerry Golden, a Democrat. And hopefully they can use the procedures of the House to force this Ukrainian bill to also bring assistance to Israel and Taiwan and to bring relief to the border. Again, this could have all been done. This could have been passed. We could have border security if not for Donald Trump putting out the edict that no, you cannot pass this because it will help Biden in the election. Once again, Donald Trump putting politics before people. The bill in the Senate got over 60 votes, bipartisan. There are Republicans like Brian Fitzpatrick in the House trying to do the right thing. We just need a handful of people with some courage who aren't afraid of losing their seat to do the right thing. We're going to come back with Jeff Timmer on the other side, former executive director of the Michigan Republican Party, now a senior advisor with the Lincoln Project, live from Michigan. We will preview the Michigan primaries going on right now, the latest live from Jeff Timmer. This is the Todd Allball Show, and this is the Civic Media Radio Network. Truth, wherever it may lead, and having fun doing it. Welcome back to the Todd Allball Show on the Civic Media Radio Network across the state of Wisconsin and streaming worldwide on the Civic Media app. If you don't have it, great time to do it. Download it on your Apple or Android device. Takes less than a minute. It is free. It's what Gail King at CBS calls a deal. What a deal for us is we have our friend Jeff Timmer stop by. He is the former executive director of the Michigan Republican Party. Now, like our friend Trigvi Olson, a senior advisor at the Lincoln Project and co-host of A Republic. Jeff Timmer, welcome back to the program. Thank you so much for taking a time out on this busy Michigan primary day.
Well, it is a busy day, and it's gorgeous here. It's in the 70s in February. I'll take that weather anytime.
Isn't that crazy? It's the same here. It's the same here, like 70s, and then tomorrow it's going to be 25.
Yeah.
It's nuts. So how does that – are Michiganders the same as Wisconsinites? Do they tend to come out a little bit better, a higher turnout when it's weather like this versus 20 degrees and snow?
Yeah, and I think we're all of hardy stock. You know, this is you might wear a T-shirt with your shorts instead of a jacket with your shorts when it's weather like this. So
well said. Well, yeah. We're hardy Midwesterners. We're going to wear those shorts.
That's right. That's right.
Well, for people, but, you know, go ahead.
Oh, well, I was going to say, but Michigan for the first time is now an early voting state.
Right.
And is now, people have been voting here for the last 9 days, and there's already about a million votes that have been cast in the primary.
Wow.
which is new. I have no way to tell if, you know, how that relates to previous elections, because this is the first election in which it has happened.
Right. It was last year, correct, that Michigan decided to move this up to kind of be more important in the, but as it turns out, everybody's kind of dropping out earlier this time around on both sides of the aisle. So it really maybe isn't quite as sexy as it would have been in years past.
Yeah, that's for sure. But when it came to moving up the primaries, the Democratic National Committee wanted to make their early states more reflective of the country as a whole, rather than the older white demographics of Iowa and New Hampshire. And so they chose states like South Carolina and Michigan and Nevada is the place that they were starting their primary selection process.
Got it. So it was intentional. So we'll see. Now, in Wisconsin, we're having a big debate right now on whether or not the legislature is going to change the law to allow for early counting of those earlier absentee ballots. They don't do that yet in Wisconsin. What's the lay of the land in Michigan? Are those million or so ballots you said are in, can those be counted before a polls close tonight or not?
Yes, they can, and this is also this is the first time in 2022 Michiganders passed a new constitutional amendment allowing for 9 days of early voting, in-person early voting. So this is the first election, and that's accounted for most of those million votes ahead of time. And it also allows the clerks to do some level of processing and in getting ahead of those early votes and absentee votes that have come in, so that those results will come more quickly in the wake of the polls closing, rather than allow the optical fodder for Donald Trump and the delusional people who think the elections are stolen to complain about the fact that cities where there are large numbers of voters, Milwaukee or Detroit or Ann Arbor or Madison, and it takes longer to process tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of votes versus a couple hundred votes, so, you know, it takes longer. And so this should help with some of that optical fiction that has been, kind of manifesting itself in our body politics since the 2020 election.
Now, see, Michiganders, you folks over in Michigan, I mean, God love you. You beat our rear ends in football every year. Maybe we could change that now. I'm not sure. But when it comes to democracy and voting, you guys just have it more together than we do. And with Gretchen Whitmer as your fine governor over there. But also, I want to ask you in seriousness, Jeff Timmer, do you think that part of this was due to, did Michigan get their poop in a group quicker on redistricting to have fair maps? And now, do you think that could follow in Wisconsin now that we just got that here? Or what is it about Michigan that these very common sense things like you just describing about counting those ballots early, what has led to that?
Well, there's a couple things that have led to it. In 2016, when Donald Trump was elected and won Michigan and Wisconsin by very small margins, 10,000 in Michigan and about 20,000 in Wisconsin. The Republicans in Michigan controlled literally everything. They had every elected statewide office, all the constitutional officers. They controlled a majority of the federal delegation. They controlled had for decades both houses of the legislature. Now they control nothing. They've lost all the constitutional statewide elections. They've lost the majority of the federal delegation, and they have lost their decades-long majorities in the state legislature. Two reasons for that. One is Donald Trump and the fact that under Donald Trump and the rise of MAGA, Republicans have become like kryptonite to suburban college-educated voters, and that has caused a massive realignment of the voting coalitions in Michigan and elsewhere. But the second and very significant factor, you hit the nail on the head, is redistricting. In 2018, Michigan passed a constitutional amendment. This was a statewide initiative to change the way districts were drawn, put it in the hands of an independent citizens commission versus previously it had been done in the legislature. I had drawn the maps in 2011 and 2001 on behalf of the Republicans, and I know from experience and from court rulings that our thumbs were on the scale when we drew them, the same way that they were in Wisconsin, right, or have been in Wisconsin. Yeah. So when partisan, one of the constitutional criteria now is that the resulting maps, be they congressional maps, state Senate or state House, they can give no disproportionate advantage to either political party in the aggregate. They look in the aggregate, and there's all kinds of wonky political science measurements and formulas that are applied to this, but they kick out actual numbers, and there's a whole bunch of them, and they kind of look at the preponderance of evidence and say these are fair on the partisan balance. They represent demographically. They're fair with the Voting Rights Act, things like that. They're, you know, one man, one vote, and all those kinds of things. But it changed fundamentally the partisan balance when the lines, the maps, when there wasn't effectively a predetermined outcome.
Yeah, it's interesting what happens when you have fairer maps for people to vote on. So give me the lay of the land. And we're talking with Jeff Timmer, former executive director of the Michigan Republican Party, now a senior advisor with the Lincoln Project and co-host of A Republic. Jeff, give us the lay of the land now with these primaries as we watch the results come in, because the big story seemed to be out of South Carolina with most mainstream media. Oh, Trump gets 60%. I thought the bigger story was that Haley got 40%. 40% of the Republican base was anti-Trump, and 59% of those said they're never again Trumpers in November. So that's one story. Is are we going to have to say the same thing tonight in Michigan, the Republican side? On the Democratic side, you have all these people saying, oh, my God, Biden might stub his political toe because there's a few people that are pro-Palestine that want to vote none of the above tonight to embarrass him. Jeff Timmer, what say you?
Well, the outcome tonight is predetermined. Joe Biden is going to win more than 80 and possibly more than 90% of the vote. And that is expected. And that if this uncommitted push yields 10 or 20%, that's not outside the historic norm. There are historically anywhere between 20 and 100,000 votes in the uncommitted slot in the Democratic primary, whether it was Joe Biden or Hillary Clinton or Barack Obama. So anything outside, something more than, you know, 20% of the vote tonight for uncommitted shows that there would be a concern in the progressive base, but it's a fixable concern for the White House. The bigger story to me has been Trump's dominance and paradoxically his weakness in the Republican Party. That he got 50% of the vote in Iowa, he got 56% of the Republican vote in New Hampshire, and 60% of the Republican vote in South Carolina. I expect that he will get somewhere between 60 and 70% of the vote tonight in Michigan. And that indicates a glaring weakness for a functional incumbent. He is running effectively as an unopposed Republican incumbent. Nikki Haley is nothing more than a nuisance to him. She's not going to win the nomination. She's not going to win a state. She's going to win very few delegates across the country. The fact that Trump is gearing his message and his campaign to overperformance in the Republican base has a ceiling in November. And as I mentioned earlier, he is kryptonite to those suburban college-educated white voters who are going to be the deciding block of voters in this election. The same way that they delivered victories for Tony Evers in 2022 and for Joe Biden in Wisconsin and Michigan in 2020, they are going to be a huge problem for Donald Trump in the Republicans up and down the ticket in November.
You're a former executive director of the Michigan Republican Party. I spent 30-ish years in the Wisconsin Republican Party along with our friend Trigvi Olson. We're all left now. I said in Wisconsin, you know, you had on Fox News, you have Bret Baier calling out Trump this weekend when asked, how are you going to appeal to those suburban women that you just talked about? Trump's response was the big lie that he still thinks he won the 2020 election. Bret Baier on Fox, we played it on the show, pushed back and just said, you didn't win the 2020 election. If I'm the chair or the executive director of Michigan or in Wisconsin, I'm going, how do I win these women, these important voters in suburban Wisconsin or Michigan when my nominee is talking about the big lie? I mean, sure, to your point, they could keep winning. The Trump people could keep winning primaries. But how do you beat Biden in November, Jeff Timmer?
Well, Michigan is even worse than it is in most states when it comes to the Republican Party. In Michigan right now, you have two factions, each claiming to be the legitimately elected Republican Party. You have they're voting today in the primary. They're holding two separate state conventions, one in Grand Rapids and one in Detroit on Saturday. There is a lawsuit working its way through who is the legitimate chair of the Michigan Republican Party. They're sending out cease and desist orders against each other. And this is like, if for anybody who's a Monty Python fan, in the movie Life of Brian, there's the Judean People's Front and the People's Front of Judea. And only they know the difference between the two, right? And so that's what's going on. Instead of looking at how do we win up and down the ticket as a political party would do, they're just worried about fighting each other for who's crazier, who's more Trumpy, and who gets the power, and more importantly, in their minds, who gets control of the bank accounts.
We had a caller calling in before he came on and wanted to know, and you touched on this a little bit, but again, for people who are, look, I mean, people are entitled to their opinion, who are dissatisfied with the Biden White House position on Palestine and the Israeli war right now. I think it's important to remind people it was Trump who moved the U.S. embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. And there's no, I mean, Trump isn't going to be any better for Palestinians should he get a second term. In fact, it'll be worse.
Certainly would be worse, as those voters in Michigan or elsewhere, whether they're of Palestinian descent or not, have to ask themselves, who would better represent the position they would like to see the results, the outcome of this horrible situation in Gaza, initiated by Hamas,
right.
not the Israelis, right. And who would be better, who would be a greater ally toward a permanent solution, Donald Trump or Joe Biden? I think the answer is pretty clear, despite whatever might materialize with their protest vote today. And like I said, they're going to claim victory if they have 10,000 votes, right, against Joe Biden. But I think that it really needs to be in an excess of 100,000 or even 200,000 votes before it really indicates any kind of serious trouble for Joe Biden.
About a minute left. Jeff Timmer, always appreciate you making time for us. You've been there as well in the Republican Party. One of the things Republicans have always been good at in my time, we're coalescing together. I think what you're talking, you this split the Republican Party. In Wisconsin, you have Paul Ryan and now the former chair, Andrew Hitt on one side, and Scott Walker and Reince Priebus on the other. Same in Michigan?
Same, and it's become more of a blood sport. In fact, there, if your listeners want to Google violence at Michigan Republican conventions and gatherings, there have been physical assaults at several within the last year, and so that is literal fistfights breaking out between men and women at official Michigan Republican Party gatherings. It's now become the normal course of action.
Jeff Timmer, former executive director of the Michigan Republican Party. Thank you so much for your insight. Thank you so much for your time. And who knows? Maybe we'll get to a Michigan-Wisconsin football game together this year, whenever they play together next. We'll see.
That sounds great, Todd. Or at least a Packers game.
There is where you can do a Packers All right, game. Thanks, Jeff Timmer. Appreciate it. More on the other side. Don't go anywhere. It's the Todd Allball Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. Welcome back to the Todd Allball Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. It is now 10 minutes before the hour of 2 o'clock. That's 10 minutes away from the Maggie Dawn Show, premiering this week right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Maggie Dawn every afternoon from 2 until 4. We're right in the middle of two fine people. We have Jane Matt Nair on air as our lead-in, and Maggie Dawn right after us. And we are lucky to have both of them on either side of us here on an afternoon, middays here at Civic Media. What a guy that Jeff Timmer is, Mr. Zommers. I mean, there's the kind of people you love talking to. Somebody who has been there, who is there, who has these facts off the top of his head because he's lived it. What a great guy. We appreciate Jeff Timmer coming on today.
Absolutely. And that's been the experience with everybody we've had on from the Lincoln Project, really. Yeah. Is that it turns out they're part of the organization because they know what they're doing.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think a couple of key takeaways from me, because from somebody who is on the ground and knows Michigan politics, as he said, don't get concerned if there's this, small percentage of people that are voting against Joe Biden tonight in the uncommitted, because as he said, it doesn't matter whether it's Barack Obama or Hillary Clinton, this is the norm in Michigan. And you're going to have to start approaching the 200,000 votes against Biden tonight to really have what you might consider a political problem. And even that could be addressed and fixed long before November. Again, the more interesting part of this, Timmer is saying, is the anti-Trump vote in Michigan tonight. Watch that. And also, it turns out that the Republican Party of Michigan, they're coming fist to cuffs. Fisticuffs, having a wall banger, a gallywag, whatever it is. They're literally fighting amongst themselves, Republicans in Michigan. And this
does not shock me.
This is something I've been talking about in Wisconsin as a former Republican myself who left the party in 2011. Now, I don't know of any actual fisticuffs, in Wisconsin Republican Party politics, but they're certainly divided. They're certainly split. Again, you have Mark Jefferson moving on down. Mark Jefferson, who is leaving the party under very dark circumstances, wondering if he's going to be investigated or indicted in this fake elector business. It is not usual for the executive director of a state party to step down during an election year. Mark Jefferson in Wisconsin is doing that. As we said, we have Paul Ryan, former Speaker of the House, Republican from Janesville, Wisconsin, once lauded as the favorite son of Wisconsin Republican politics. He is now a never again Trumper. And you have Andrew Hitt, the immediate past chairman of the Republican Party of Wisconsin, a fake elector, but now under the duress of looking at jail time, decides to tell the truth and says, yes, the 2020 election was fair and free. Trump lost. I'm never voting for him again. You have the former Speaker of the House and the former chairman of the Republican Party of Wisconsin, neither of whom will be at the Republican National Convention in Milwaukee if Trump is the nominee, which is all but certain. If you're the Republican Party of Wisconsin, how do you square that? How do you motivate your base? And also, by the way, current chairman, Brian Schimming, and this I applaud him on. He's trying to get people to vote early. I think they're something about build the vote or something like that.
Bank the vote, maybe.
Thank you. That's what it is. Bank the vote. I think that's great, really. More people voting. I don't care. As long as you're voting fairly, freely, and correctly, more people, citizens that vote, the better. But what you have is Schimming trying to do this for the Republican Party of Wisconsin, something that Ben Winkler and the Democrats have perfected. Democrats are voting early, all right. But you have, again, your nominee, Trump, saying don't do that. So, I mean, how do you square that?
You don't. You just keep going and pretend it didn't happen, right. Move on from it, and don't address it.
Yeah. By the way, here's Nikki Haley, I believe from last night, campaigning in Michigan, talking to Michiganders. I like saying that word, by the way, Michiganders. Talking to Michiganders last night in Michigan. Here is Nikki Haley, governor of South Carolina, former governor, on the road.
If people don't look at what is happening, Donald Trump can't win a general election. The RNC is broke. He has spent $60 million of his own campaign contributions on legal fees. Now he's going to start draining it out of the RNC. How in the...
There you go. I mean, she's absolutely right. And this is another story that's not getting a lot of attention, is how Trump is draining the resources, the financial resources of the Republican Party. Now he's forced Rona McDaniel out, and he's putting his daughter-in-law and his campaign manager in as the Chris LaCivita and Laura Trump. They will drain dry any monetary resources that are at the RNC. Trust me. I mean, what do you do? 56 minutes now past the hour of 1 o'clock. Just looking at my phone, some breaking news. Sad news from the Packers organization. According to the Packers, Sherry Starr, the widow of Packer quarterback legend Bart Starr, has died at the age of 89. Again, breaking across the wires at this hour, the widow of Packers quarterback Bart Starr, Sherry Starr, has passed away at the age of 89. Some of that Packers lore, just, you know, once they're gone, they're gone. That's why
89,
but that's a full life, right?
Right.
It's a full life. And you think about what Bart Starr and Sherry Starr did. Oftentimes these celebrities, they do their best work after they're out of their celebrity dumb, if that's the word. I mean, look at Jimmy Carter and Rosalynn Carter, you know, was criticized by many as not being a particularly great president while in office, although that's been debatable as the years have continued, but all the work they did for Habitat for Humanity after they were out of office, President and Rosalynn Carter, same for Bart and Sherry Starr, all the great, the Rawhide Boys Ranch in Wisconsin, and all the kids that they helped over the years, I think is a bigger legacy than what Bart Starr did to the Packers.
I think it makes people like that, makes it undebatable that they are good people and that, right. Well, again, you can argue whether or not Jimmy Carter was right for the role of president. Mm. It set him up to contribute to society afterward.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, you look at the relative short amount of time that Bart Starr stayed on the field, as great as he was as the Packers quarterback, he and Sherry Starr's wife had a profound impact on Wisconsinites and Americans, and we're thinking of all of them. Again, breaking news, Sherry Starr, widow of Packers quarterback Bart Starr, has died at the age of 89. We thank Jeff Timmer, former executive director of the Michigan Republican Party. Thank Mr. Zomers as well, and all of you for calling in. We appreciate you. Great show. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Until then, this is Todd Allball saying, whatever you're fighting for, whatever you believe in, do not give up. Keep banging on your drum.